Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed and everyone downloads it and listens to it. Oh, that's the plan. So, this is what I'm going to be talking about today is a review of a book that I actually read in one sitting late at night because it's a very short book and then promptly kind of forgot about it until I got an email from Amazon saying, hey, there's this book that you read and I guess not many people have read that, or the book that you downloaded as a Kindle ebook or something, and why not go to Amazon and do a review? And that made me think, oh, yes, I did read that book a few weeks ago. I should actually do a review of it for my podcast. But before I get into the book, I just want to mention this. I am still doing Audible sponsorships. So if you are interested in getting an Audible, which is an audiobook company, if you're interested in getting an Audible account, you could actually help out the Science Fiction Book Review podcast by going to www.audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And if by doing that you get an audiobook for free, you can actually start off a free trial. And if you sign up, this book, this free book is yours for as long as you want it. But then if you stick around for more than a month, you do actually have to sign up for an Audible account, an Audible subscription. The way it works is that you just pay so many dollars per month. I think it depends a little bit on the plan that you get or where you are, and you have access to, it says here, 100,000 titles, 100,000 different audiobooks. And last episode, when we were talking about Dune, me and Juliana were talking about Dune, we mentioned the audiobook there, and it was a really good audiobook. So you could also, you know, you could check out Dune. I would suggest reading an ebook or a paperback version of Dune first, but the audiobook is a lot of fun. If you read Dune before and you want to get a taste of what an audiobook could be like, the Dune audiobook is interesting because parts of it are done as a full cast, so each different actor different actors take different characters and does the voices individually, and then other points the book is read straight just by a single narrator. Now, that's a very weird thing for an audiobook to do, but I guess it's because they did an abridged version with a full cast, and then the main narrator did the narration for even the bits that weren't abridged. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. But it's not just Dune, of course. There's loads and loads and loads of other great books there on Audible, science fiction books. And I say this because I got an email from Audible saying, "Hey, we want you to become a partner." And I think this is great. And because I use them, I'm an Audible subscriber. I've got a platinum plan, which means I get two free audiobooks per month, which I thoroughly enjoy, even though at the moment my credits are piling up as I'm not doing quite as much audiobook listening or even science fiction reading as well. And I mention this now, of course, because I got another email from them saying, "Hey, we've just deposited some money to you." Which is good. So if you go and help out the SFBRP by going to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, that is also, that supports the podcast because I then use the money that I get from Audible to pay for my Audible subscription and buy other books and things like that to support the podcast. So with the promotion out of the way, let's get on to today's book. Now, this is continuation in the kind of evolving nature of the SFBRP. As you noticed, I've been sort of doing a few more episodes with guests on recently and different styles of books. And I've also been reviewing a few kind of like self-published books by new authors. Again, this is not just putting this out, like, this is not an invitation for anyone to send me ebooks or like ask me to read free ebooks and stuff like that. I will read books as and when I want, and I won't, and I'm not swayed by publishers or authors or any promotion companies sending me emails or sending me free books, because I get many, many of them each week, and I can't let the will of publishers decide what I'm going to review. I was listening to a podcast. There's a podcast network where I listened to two shows of this podcast network called 5x5. And one of the shows that I listen to is closing down, and I thought, well, I'll listen to check out some of the other new shows. And there's this one show called Quit, which I thought was quite a funny idea of having a whole podcast show about trying to encourage people to quit their jobs. Anyway, on the first episode of Quit, the guest of one of the guest presenters of this podcast was called Schlock Vader, and he's from Austin in Texas. And he, I think he once worked for Apple, or I'm not entirely sure, but he was, he was sort of involved in the Apple computing. Oh, no, he didn't. He worked as a, I'm getting confused now, because it was a few weeks ago that I listened to this. He worked as a, for a think tank, which was all about, technology influencing the war on terror and, you know, counter-terrorism and things like that. And so what happened was that he was, he was doing this, and he thought, well, I'm going to write a book. And so he wrote a book, and it's called The Rise of Siri. And it's a short book. I downloaded it as a Kindle edition. And just because I quite like the idea of a science fiction book written about Apple. I think it's a funny thing to say. Okay, he says this is going to be the first in a trilogy. One will be written about Apple. One will be written about Google, and one will be written about, I'm off the top of my head, Amazon or Microsoft or another one of these, you know, tech companies, and using the companies as they are now as the starting point of fiction. And so I read the book, and it only took a few hours to read, maybe like, what, 2 hours, or probably a bit less than 2 hours. And I started reading it in bed, ready to fall asleep, and I managed to finish it before I fall asleep. So it was obviously a very quick read and a good read to keep me up for that time that I was reading it, of course. And it works a bit like this, and it's different from pretty much any other science fiction book that I've read before, and it's different in a very good way. First of all, I'll talk about the good, and then I'll get onto some of the bad. The good point is that it's written about stuff that is happening right now, and to show how right now this book was written, it mentions a few news stories and a few characters. And the first character that it mentions, sort of like in relation to a recent news story, is the Scott Forstall, who was a software engineer. And it mentions quite at the beginning of Rise of Siri. Oh, and Scott Forstall was fired back in 2012. He was fired from the company. The book is set, you know, a few years in the future. And he says, yeah, he was fired in 2012. And so you're like, oh, okay. And so you're like, oh, so this book was written in 2012. But when I was reading this book, that news story had only happened a few weeks before, I'm guessing. It says, I'm just looking here on his Wikipedia page. So yeah, on Monday, October 29th, Apple announced from the press release that Forstall had resigned as a senior vice president of iOS, blah, 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 blah. So you go, okay, so this book was written after, or a big chunk of it, or he revised the book for after Monday, October the 29th. And then blah, 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 the book goes on. And then a bit later, it says, oh, and David Petraeus is now the vice president. And you're like, whoa, David Petraeus is the vice president. But I'm thinking, well, he just had this, you know, extramarital affair, and that probably, you know, he's probably, you know, he's not the leader of the CIA anymore, and this kind of stuff. And I said, well, when did that happen? And looking on David Petraeus' Wikipedia page, it was pretty much November the 6th, or November 6th, 7th, 8th is when all that was going down, and he resigned. So this book, Rise of Siri, was probably written around the end of October and revised. Maybe it was revised for the Scott Forstall, but there is some, you know, there is quite a bit based around the Forstall character and his being fired and coming back to the company and the tension between Scott Forstall and Tim Cook and Johnny Ive is quite a big part of the book. So I'm thinking, well, this was probably written after then, but before David Petraeus. So this is, we got like a week time period for this book, for this story. This is pretty much quite a short novella, was written. Now, what this means is this book is super up to date with the technology that we have right now. It's going, okay, what is the latest release of Apple, you know, iOS 6? You know, what is the state of iOS Maps right now? What's the state of Apple's relationship with Google right now? What's the state of their manufacturing right now? Because again, that's a big part of the book. And so that's where it starts. It goes, okay, taking Apple from where it is right now, extrapolating a few years into the future, you know, so the, I guess, I can't remember if it's true or not, but the, like, maybe the Apple TV that there, that is always rumored and continuously rumored about Apple, maybe that's there. And so yeah, what about this? And then what's the next step? So the book begins with it says here, Aaron Ridgway, and Aaron Ridgway is Apple's director of security. And his normal job is to stop people, you know, selling company secrets or, you know, leaking things. But then all shit goes down in China, and the supply chain of everything from China, which is pretty much all of Apple's manufacturing, happens in China, and all of everybody's manufacturing, all of American consumer goods manufacturing happens in China. With the idea being that suddenly the Chinese economy closes down, and all of the companies are, you know, taken over by the Chinese government, and all restrictions, and nothing is coming out of China at all. And suddenly Apple has to deal with this. And so the start, like the first section of this book, follows the story of the Apple, I was going to say board of directors, but it's more of their executive team, I think they call it, I just looked at the book description here on Amazon. It's Anonymous brings the global economy to its knees. So we've got a bit of like internet activism bringing down China. And so you've got Tim Cook, who is the, I guess, the executive director, or I don't remember all the exact titles of these people, but there's Tim Cook, who is, you know, he rallies his executive team and turns to Aaron Ridgway to help save the company. So yes, that's what happens, that Tim Cook says, right, Apple is going to spend all of its money that it's been saving, it's going to spend it here, and then it's going to spend it there, and then it's going to spend it here, and they just start buying up different companies. It's like, oh, we need manufacturers, we need to buy Intel or something. Again, I'm just making up these examples because I can't remember. But the kind of thing that you see these companies doing, where it's like, you know, Google just needs, oh man, patents, what should we do? Oh, let's just buy Motorola. It's like, yeah, we've got the money. And you think, well, isn't Motorola a big company? And then you realize, yeah, Motorola is not that big of a company compared to Google. And so what we have is kind of a playing out of the Apple fanboy fantasies as science fiction, with Apple being able to, it's like, okay, if Apple could just buy any company, let's make it so Apple has to buy some companies. What will they buy, and what will Apple look like after they buy, you know, after they buy Compaq, or after they buy IBM, or, you know, or these, oh no, I guess IBM and Compaq don't actually manufacture anything. But, you know, these companies, other like computer companies which do still manufacture things, like maybe AMD would be a good choice. Not going to buy Intel, but AMD is a good bet for Apple to buy, that kind of thing. So that's the beginning of it, and you see kind of the internal workings of the Apple executive team. And I'm guessing most of the names that are mentioned in the book are actually on the Apple executive team. Of course, I only know Johnny Ive and Tim Cook and Steve Jobs, and Steve Jobs is gone now, and I only know Tim Cook because he's the main guy, and Johnny Ive because he's a design legend. So I'm not like totally inside the world of Apple fanboyism, although I do recognize some of the names, and I do know that Apple is based in Cupertino. So I mean, that's pretty much all I needed to know going into this book story wise And so that's the beginning of the book. And of course, because this book was written so recently, they can talk about like companies now, which, and it doesn't feel super dated. However, this book will date. I reckon in 6 months' time, this book will already feel out of date, not just because David Petraeus is no longer a vice president, like a prospective or a maybe future vice president kind of nomination or even real vice president. But the other events, for example, now I just brought up a recent news event. It says Tim Cook tells NBC Apple will be building Macs in the US, and this is December the 6th. So by reading this book, it kind of puts Apple's business a bit into perspective, and it's kind of like a your little kind of ABCs of Apple and the way their company works, even though it's a total fiction. But it kind of sets up, it's like, okay, what is Apple like, or what is the company Apple doing right now? And where can it go in the future? And of course, one of the things that it has to do in the future is secure non-Chinese manufacturing. And then a few weeks after this book comes out, maybe 3 weeks after this book comes out on December 6th, it then says, yes, Tim Cook tells NBC Apple will be building Macs in the US. And you realize, oh, so they are wanting to do something in the US. Of course, not all the iPhones and everything like that, but you realize that they do have some designs for diversifying their supply chain and looking at, you know, getting processors from, you know, or wherever it's, wherever they're gonna be building these things, or, you know, supply, where the supplies are gonna come in from China to America, and they're gonna do their final construction or assembly here. I say here, not in China, and so that means that if the Chinese supply closes down, well, as long as they can get parts from somewhere, they can still assemble them with their own guys or in their own factories here. So, The book Rise of Siri is actually quite clever commentary on the kind of business direction, even though it's a total fantasy world retelling or telling of the Apple board of directors or executive team thing. So that's one good thing, and it makes me want to read other books like this, where it starts off and it goes, okay, what are we like? Not like now, currently, roughly, what will it be like in the future? Because, you know, a lot of science fiction will be written now and it'll be released, you know, it'll go through the editing process. And, you know, to start from the starting writing of a book through to the publication, probably, you know, a year, and at the very shortest, 18 months or something like that is what it's going to be. I was just read a blog post by Tobias S. Bukel about his new book that a novel that he did by Kickstarter, and I think they did the Kickstarter in January, and now it's being delivered because he gave himself 6 months to write it, and then a few months to put it out, and it even took longer than he thought, but still a year from starting to write it. However, again, but the writing is only part of it, and the publishing is only part of it, but also you've got to come up with the story, and you can come up with the world, and many people spend, like authors spend years, or good authors will spend years kind of having a story idea percolating in their head while they're writing other things. They'll be putting stuff aside for the next book, or the next book after that, or the next book after that. So they spend a lot of time doing it, and whereas this kind of fiction by, you know, The Rise of Siri by Schlock Vader is, you're going, well, okay, so what is it? I don't need to do research about what the world is going to be like in this alternative world a few years in the future. I don't need to extrapolate too far into the future. I can just take the world as it is now. And I've got a story idea now. So, and it's not going to be a long story or going to be a complex story. It's only going to be, you know, 20,000 words or, you know, 50,000 words or whatever it's going to be. And I'm going to write that story right now. And then I'm going to put it out next week. And so the news just doesn't move that quickly. The world doesn't move that quickly. And that is what I want more of. I think I'd love to read a novel that was written last week, that was edited this week and released 2 days ago. And then if I read it now, I'm getting a novel built around today's world and today's assumptions and today's characters and news events that are happening right now. And it gives a certain freshness to it, and also an insight into the current world, which is more timely. I know it's a weird, like, it's not just a function of time, it's a function of closeness, it's a function of making a reference and then not having to explain it. It's about, like, you know, a news story and not having to go well into the news story and using characters, and you don't need to explain all the characters, you just say, oh, and Tim Cook does this. And because this is, you know, Rise of Siri is a very specific story about a specific company, but, it, you know, it'd be like just going, oh, and this happened, trying to think of a big new story. Yeah, maybe the Connecticut school shootings or something, and just go blah blah. And just imagine reading a novel like this week or next week, which mentions characters from that, or you know, like events evolving around there, and reading like not a fictionalized retelling of the event, but a fictional story which is inspired by an event and yet is written, and the novel is written and put out straight away. Now, of course, like short fiction, I'm sure has been here before, but now with, you know, with the Kindle or with, you know, Amazon and being able to put out ebooks so quickly, this is possible. I did it myself in a way, and not taking advantage of the, you know, of the news stories or anything like that, but the one of the experimental science fiction stories that I did called The Monster Story Conference, I wrote that over 4 days. It's like, you know, it was like 40,000 words or something, but I wrote it over 4 days. I put it and edited it on the evening of the fourth day, because it didn't take a lot of editing. And I put it up that evening. The next day, someone had, and I think, yeah, I think I mentioned it on my blog or on a podcast or something like that. The next day, someone read it, sent me back some corrections, and I went through and did so. And the next day, somebody else did. So within 6 days, I had written a novella-length piece of fiction, experimental fiction, put it up on my website. Other people had, you know, checked it over for spelling and grammar, sent me back some feedback in that way. And then I'd, you know, done another editing. Now, that was an experimental writing project that I did, not a single story. But I know it's possible to write 40,000 words of fiction in 4 days and get it up, you know, and put it out and have people, you know, download it and read it. And now with the Kindle store, of course, it's even quicker. And that's what the rise of Siri does. That's what Schlock Vader has done here. And I think it's only going to accelerate into the future. There's no reason for an author to be, for a short story like this or a short novella like this, there's no reason for an author to go through normal publishing. And actually, all the normal publishing channels gets in the way of very timely stuff like this. So that's what I want to mention here. Oh yes, of course, the story of the rise of Siri goes on, and it goes further than just, you know, China closing down, because then the world economy starts going to shit, and it gets a lot more onto like what is Apple as a company going to bring to the United States. It's very much a United States based book, American based book, and it gets on to the point where as society collapses, Apple is one of these, you know, institutions which is strong enough to withstand the fall of the economy. And I really like this idea, not about Apple, but the whole idea of when you when a country, a nation collapses, and it's you try and like say in Iraq, okay, you get in Iraq, you go into Iraq, and you take over Iraq, and what you need to actually do in this case is in the fall of a government, is that the more other institutions that survive that fall, the stronger the new country is going to be. And that's the, you know, the mark of a stable country, a stable nation, is the number of institutions. And the institutions could be a church, it can be an army, it can be, you know, like taking the UK as an example, you've got all of these, you know, the Royal Society of the Royal Society, which is science, and then you got the Society of this and the Society of that, and you've got universities over here and education systems over there, and you've got think tanks here, and the network of established elements, established like fixed points which you can look at and go, yes, I know what these guys do, they do that. I know what these people over here do that. You know, unions, large employers, and all that kind of thing. The more of them that stay constant, when a government collapses, they can take over the role. And in East Berlin, the same kind of thing happened when the Berlin Wall fell. They put together a temporary city government, which would kind of cover East and West Berlin, so the two sides could work together, because, you know, the East German government kind of, dissolved at that point. They didn't have any power. So all of, you know, the people who were put in power were people like university professors and like the conductor of the orchestra, you know, and even if you think about it, like even an orchestra can have a huge influence on the development or the stability of a country. And so when, of course, America, rolled in to Iraq, and they pretty much like disbanded everything. And the worst thing, of course, was them disbanding the Iraqi army, because that was one of the biggest institutions in Iraq, and would have been the best bet to have that continuity. And again, you see the same kind of thing happening in Egypt. All the government collapses, but in Egypt it doesn't have a mature civil society of all these institutions. And the biggest institution, of course, you go, oh well, it's the Muslim Brotherhood, and you go, oh. And it's the Muslim Church and the Coptic Christians and these other kind of the Jews, they are sort of like overwhelmed by like a single institution rather than being just one of many, 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 many different institutions. So the rise of Syria is obviously looking at that same kind of idea, that big companies like Google, like Amazon, like Apple, in the collapse of the economy or the collapse of a country, the country itself doesn't collapse, but there is a bit, there is like, okay, the government is failing us, we've got to turn elsewhere, who are we going to turn to? And of course, Schlockvedia is as an Apple fanboy, or a guy, or someone who is an expert in Apple, I guess maybe an expert, reads the news a lot, and was in a think tank about technology and counterterrorism, stuff like this. This is obviously one of his go-to points, being that Apple and Google and Amazon are these new society stabilization institutions for the modern world. Again, he doesn't go into it like I have just done there, because this is a very quick book and he kind of takes a lot of that. Well, he doesn't take it for granted, but he explains it not by talking about institutions and, the Church of England and the Royal Society and all these kind of things provide stability through, he doesn't go into it that way, but he's obviously playing with that same concept of the Apple Store. The local Apple Store is just as a point of safety and authority as running to a church to hide from the marauding barbarians coming in. You barricade yourself in the church. It's sort of like a strong place in the medieval world, or maybe there, and then it's not the church, you'd run to somewhere else and barricade yourself in somewhere else. But now it's like, oh yes, run to the Apple Store and barricade yourself in there. That kind of thought process. Now, and then the book, that's sort of like the middle section of the book, and then the last section of the book goes back to more to sort of like the future of product design and the future and where Apple is going to, well, where Apple could go in the future. It's like, well, what electronic device could they make in the future which is going to be their next big seller? And that gets a little bit into the rise of Siri, and it gets, I think at that point the book seems to be these three sections of the book, and there I thought that was one of the more interesting in a way, because it was more specifically about Apple and a bit less specifically, no, let me put it this way, it was more specifically about the Apple that people see, like, okay, when you go and buy something from Apple, what do you get? And it kind of answers that question rather than what does Apple do to deliver stuff, or what can Apple be, or what is Apple, and what does Apple do? And then it gets back to what does Apple sell? And the what does Apple sell question, it's like the last part of the book. So I think that's all I need to say about the kind of setup and the story and the concepts and the themes of the book. Of course, there is more to say about the actual technology and the writing. I don't have any notes, I'm just going off the top of my head for this review. So the action itself, it reminded me quite a bit of, in good ways and bad ways, of the book Demon by I think it was Daniel Suarez that I read and really, really enjoyed the first third of the book, because the first third of the book is like a short novella length story with a crazy technologist who dies, and then there's this whole booby trapped house kind of thing. And I really enjoyed that bit because there's some mystery and there's a technology and there's some action and all that kind of stuff. And then the rest of the book is just absolutely shit. Thankfully, Rise of Ciri is like the first third of that book, because you get all the action, you get the silly action, you get the silly technologies, you get the rich people spending lots of money doing stupid stuff, and then it stops before it tries to extend the story out over quite a chunky novel worth, like Daniel Suarez did in Demon. So that's what I say. Read the first third or the first section of Demon until the guy gets put in jail, then stop reading. Then stop reading, because that's quite a fun story. And it's got some, you know, interesting technology ideas in it. And the Rise of Ciri gets to the point where Daemon does, and then stops. But there's hints that if it had carried on, it would have just got really, really stupid. Rise of Ciri has the similar levels of action, similar levels of technological deployment, you know, with these, you know, little drones buzzing around, you know, all the kind of, you know, cool, whizzy technology that is around at the moment. People go, oh, these drones are spying on you, these blimps and stuff. And, you know, you get the drone strikes and then you get like the cool, you know, technology-enabled weaponry and all the good stuff like that. And then right at the end of Rise of Ciri, it starts turning that corner into the wishy-washy predictions, which you just go, no, that is really, really straining credibility. However, it goes, what about this possibility? And you go, not really sure. But then the book stops. You don't mind that you're kind of disagreeing with it at that point. You're just like, I'm not really sure about that. And then Rise of Ciri ends. However, in Daniel Suarez, in his book, he sets up this idea and you're going, oh, I'm not really sure. And then the book carries on like for another that length again with all the stupid shit. So you get to the point where you're like, no, I'm not quite sure. And then it's like, now let's base the entire rest of this story on this idea that you're not quite sure about and that I'm not really good enough to write. And I have a complete lack of understanding of of technology. And even though you think you know a lot about, you're meant to think that I know a lot about technology, the whole basis of, you know, physics and everything that technology is based on, I'm just going to throw that out of the window and go into a fantasy land. And it just continues into utter shitness, where you get self-driving motorbikes driving around corridors and cutting people down with swords, and you're just like, that is utter bullshit, because it's based on technology which doesn't exist, which is based on a misunderstanding of technology. Whereas Rise of Ciri gets that point and goes, how about this for a future? And even though I'm thinking, probably not, it makes me think, oh, well, you know, nice idea. And there's lots of other good stuff to go along the way. So, so yeah, that's a bit about the thing now. Let me have a look, because I did put a little review here on goodreads.com. Oh, yeah. So, like I say, I want more fiction like this, because super up-to-date fiction, short fiction, which stops just at the moment when it starts turning unbelievable. So it starts turning unbelievable, and you go, no, that's enough. And then I said on my review here on Goodreads, I said, I want more fiction like this, or to be honest, fiction like this, but with better characters. Now, what I like about it is that it's news reporting, kind of news reporting, this book is, and it's, you know, and it's speculation on technology, and it's also like a commentary on technology as it is now, and a technology company as it is now. And so that's cool. However, it is a bit too news reporting and commentary, is that it kind of assumes that you know the characters. Now, I wasn't never quite sure which of the characters were real characters or which of the characters weren't real characters. I do recognize Tim Cook and Johnny Ive and Scott Forstall. And it kind of presumes that you know who these characters are. For example, Scott Forstall, it says, you know, I checked out his Wikipedia page just to make sure, and I heard about, you know, they talked about it on a podcast about him leaving the company, of one of the podcasts that I listen to, which talks about this kind of thing called Hypercritical, and so yeah, I kind of knew that situation. However, it kind of takes for granted that you know what these people are like, and I'm not quite sure that you can know what's like. Like Steve Jobs is like, yes, you know what Steve Jobs is like. He had like this bigger than life personality, and he was known, his character was known. Tim Cook, I don't really know anything about him, except he was the guy who took over when Steve Jobs left, and he's doing his thing. And of course, because Scott Forstall was fired. And Johnny Ive as well. You see him, you know, in the Apple keynote presentations, always leaning over to one side and talking, talking about his latest designs and stuff. So you kind of see these figures, but I don't really know them as people. And yet this book doesn't waste any time, or in this case, doesn't spend any time developing their characters beyond that, like the broad, like or rough strokes that you see that I know them as from news coverage. So I think if you knew more about Apple than I did, more of an Apple fanboy, this is really good, like wish fulfillment stuff. Within, you know, what happens with the relationship with Scott Forstall, you know, he's out of Apple and he rejoins Apple, and then you know it's a quite a large piece, a part of the tension and the dramatic tension in the book is the relationship. Okay, how much power does Tim Cook have? How much power does Johnny Ive does, and these other characters and the Apple executive? Oh, I just scroll down to the bottom here. Yeah, so Scott Forstall, Phil Schiller, I guess that's... Actually, I can't remember. I can't remember the names that were mentioned in this book. But there's, talking about, oh, the board of directors want this, and then the other people want there, and then what does Steve Wozniak want? Because he's still alive. No, actually, maybe not, he's not brought into it. But again, people know Steve Wozniak. People know the Woz, because he's like a public personality, and people know him for being a bit... for being a bit crazy and all these other things. Well, maybe not crazy, but, you know, one of these eccentric genius millionaires, which is, if you're going to be eccentric, be a millionaire, otherwise you're just crazy. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, so what was I saying? Yes, so the characters, which are a non-fictional characters, it kind of assumes you know them in a way that I don't think it is possible for you to know them unless you're bringing with you your own readings of the relationships between an executive board of a big company, which I guess if you're a fanboy, that's what you want to do. However, there are some characters which I'm pretty sure are not real characters. There's there's the main character, Aaron Ridgway, and he's like, yes, and Aaron Ridgway is the director of Apple's security division. And of course, because Schlock Vader, he was a he wrote it says here on his Goodreads page, it goes, my background is building companies and counter-terrorism. So, you know, here's counter-terrorism and technology. That's him. So I'm guessing that he sees himself as the Aaron Ridgway character of being the guy who knows technology and knows defense and knows counter-terrorism. And that's what he's doing. And yet no time is spent developing his character. So when he comes in and out of the scenes, I'm never really sure, like, why I'm meant to care about this guy. Because, like, I care about... it's possible to care about real characters written into fiction because you know them as real characters. Like, yeah, David Petraeus came here and he went there and he got onto his aircraft carrier and went over there. And you're like, okay, well, he's doing something and I kind of know him and so care about him because he's a real person. But Aaron Ridgway, fictional character, don't know. And then there's these other characters where it's like, oh, he comes in, the security personnel, and it's called, you know, Simon... No, what is it? The, like, the chipmunks. Alvin, Simon, and Theodore, I think, or something like that. So Alvin suddenly turns up, and he seems to be dropped in, and he seems to have, like, a joke code name. And I was like, oh, he's a joke character. And then these security guards or these security operators kind of become a much bigger part of the story. And I'm like, well, how about telling me a little bit more about them? And then one of them gets a statue in his honor. I'm like, well, yeah, putting a statue in the person's honor is a good shortcut to say that they were appreciated by the people that he saved or gave his life to save. But it doesn't really tell me why I should care that he gave his life. Like, his sacrifice of sacrificing this person to save these other people isn't a big thing because it's a fictional person and hasn't been developed at all. Whereas if it had been Aaron Ridgway, who is, you know, because he was a fictional character. Maybe if it had been like David Petraeus giving his life to do this, that would sort of mean a lot more. It'd make this story have a lot more weight because we know David Petraeus' history. And if he gave his life for something, that would mean something. Or if Scott Forstall gave his life or Tim Cook, they decided, yeah, we're doing this important stuff for Apple, but then we're never going to... I'm going to sacrifice my life instead of Apple, instead of trying to continue Apple, I'm going to try and continue these innocent people over here. And of course, the point of the book is that no, we're doing both. By continuing Apple, we are going to try and save the world and reduce suffering in the world, which is a fun idea. But yes, I do think so what I want is books that are written within a week, that are edited well, put out, don't last too long, are about hyper current events, and that you have to read within about 3 months of them coming out, otherwise the news stories would have gone on too long for them to do that. But I do want a little bit better characterization, because those are the only things that you can't do by shortcuts. You can do, Apple, and I, okay, you don't need to, but Google is doing this, and Amazon is doing this, yeah, don't need to describe anything more about this. Oh, this real-life character is doing this, this situation in the news is happening like this. You can just mention those things, and everything about them comes along with them for a ride. You know, when you say London, you don't need to describe, London is a capital city of England. It's got this building, it's got this building, it's home to this many million of people, it's famous for this, it's famous for that. And then when you drop a bomb on London, you can just say, London was wiped out. And while that's a really, you know, crass way of, putting across the urgency of a situation by saying, yeah, London was hit by a bomb and no longer exists, you go, oh, wow. You know, I remember... Again, thinking back to, I was just thinking about this the other day when I found out that about the 9/11 attacks in 2001, a guy, you know, I was working at the time in a care center for mentally and physically disabled people, and we got onto the bus at the end of the day, and the bus driver said, "Oh, listen to this, it's all going down." This was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so it was like pretty current, and then the news reporter just said, This terrorist attack in London, flown planes into the Twin Towers in London, which have now collapsed. And just by saying which have now collapsed made me go, wait, buildings that big don't just collapse. And then it made me think through all the ramifications of what was going on. And all it had to say was like, yeah, terrorist attack, Twin Towers, which have now collapsed. And I suddenly brought to that story all of my, you know, of course, at that time, fake knowledge, or not fake knowledge, but incorrect knowledge of like the strength of buildings compared to aeroplanes. And this is the kind of thing that starts off all the, 9/11 truthers and movements. It's like, yeah, well, of course they'd have to use explosives as well, because a plane flying into a top of a building isn't going to knock down something that big. And that's my first thought. I was like, no, that can't work. And all of the things that was like, you know, all the things that came with that, you just need to say Twin Towers that have now collapsed, and it brought so much with me. Yeah, but you can't do that same kind of thing with characters, because you actually need to build characters up. Because everyone is, you know, all fictional characters need to be built up like a city. They need to be built up like a skyscraper. You've got to say, okay, this is this about them, this is this about them, this is their history, this is how long they've been there, this is what they're doing here. And, you know, and by building those histories up, building by building or floor by floor, that when then you tear them down, when they then collapse or then wiped out, in fiction or in the real world, you bring with them the destruction of all the work that has been put into that city or that building to get it to that point. And you can't do that by shortcuts within fiction. And unfortunately, that's what Schlock Vader does. So if this book were, next time he writes his book, the next book he writes, The Rise of Google, what's Google thing? Not Rise of Google, but The Fall of Google, The Rise of Siri, the Fall of G+, I don't know what it's going to be. But if use shortcuts for Google, use shortcuts for the places and technology and everything, don't use shortcuts for characters. Make me care about them before they do anything. So then I can care about them more, or I can be sad when they're gone. So I think that's all I'm going to say. I didn't think I was going to be able to talk 43 minutes about this book, because it only takes you 2 hours to read it. But I think there was a lot to say about it in terms of it, because it is a unique book for me in its kind of commentary of current events as science fiction, novella-length science fiction as commentary of current events and current companies, and also kind of like a news source as well. Even though it's not news, it's out of date, but it's quite interesting that you can date when the book was written or finalized down to within a week based on current news stories. So that'll do for now, I guess. I'm going to give this book 3 stars. It's really, as a story, it's not worth that. As characters, it's not worth that. But as like as how much I enjoyed reading it, I think that's a good balance. 3 stars. So because it is very silly. Yeah, I think that's it. So you can email me, Luke@juggler.net, if you've got any. Any feedback about this or any feedback about the previous episode with me and Juliana, our epic Dune episode? Of course, as soon as we pressed stop, we did kind of keep talking about it and think about all these other things that we wanted to mention on the Dune podcast. So you can email about that. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge on Twitter. I don't post to Twitter too often, so don't mind following me. I won't spam you with all that kind of stuff, but yeah, at Luke Burge there. You can read my blog and my other stuff that I have on my website, my own fiction, which is at lukeburge.com. And also, if you're interested in my new book project, which is a non-fiction book about the source criticism of the Bible and Star Wars and Star Wars movies, you can check that out. That's another blog that I've set up for biblical criticism matters called productivebiblegeeks.net, and you can check out Matthew, Mark, Luke Skywalker, which is my book project that I'm currently working on there. Otherwise, goodreads.com is a good place to go to follow my reading updates. The next episode that I do will probably be about David Brin's Kiln People. So I'll be looking at your reviews of Kiln People to see what you guys thought as well. So sign up for goodreads.com and check that out. And finally, of course, if you're interested in Audible subscription, you want to join up for Audible and start getting some and a different way of reading books, check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP for a free audiobook of your choice. And if you're wanting suggestions, check out the SFBRP.com page and click on episodes lists and go to where it's sorted by star ratings and check out some of my highest rated books. Again, that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.